We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Lawrence Holmes, noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station.
Previously on The Lawrence Holmes Show.
I'm just not a Trevor Bauer guy. I'm not about a guy who goes out there and campaigns because, hey, you know, my free agency, I'll see whichever fan base follows me the most on social media. That's maybe where I'll make my decision. Come on, man. That's whack. What are we doing here? We're letting social media fan base determine where you pitch and what team you pitch for and your postseason success or lack thereof. I mean, I like what Trevor Bauer does on the hill, but I feel like there's just so many outside distractions with him. So if it's not you, Doc, taking home the Cy Young Award, please let it be Jacob DeGrom. I'm sorry.
I don't think you're going to get your wish, man. I think it's going to be Trevor Bauer. His numbers are just overwhelming.
Yeah, that's all well and good, but maybe he can help a lot of teams win, but I don't know. When you see him yelling at Joey Votto, a guy who's a staple in the Cincinnati Reds organization, and just going back and forth, and just his chippy nature, he always wants to get into something on social media. It's like, it comes a time and a place, man. Let's be age appropriate. Let's grow up a little bit. Now, Trevor Bauer, being a little too old to be on social media doing all that chirping. It's like Rick James or Charlie Murphy taking karate class. Like, hey, Charlie Murphy, a little old to take karate with them kids.
Make me a bicycle clown.
Man, Cole was out here hating yesterday on the National League Cy Young Award winner. Just hating. I mean, I think I understand where that comes from, because the guys on the Cubs who are not named Yu Darvish don't like Trevor Bauer either. Kirby, do you remember when we had asked David Ross about that and he just kind of sidestepped it? Because that's what he did. He's like, yeah, that guy. Welcome in. My name is Lawrence Holmes. I'm here with you until 2 o'clock. We have a lot of stuff that's going on today's show. Our buddy Dan Durkin will join us in the next segment. I am very much looking forward to talking with Dan. I want to get his breakdown of what he saw against the Titans, and I want to see what he thinks. Are the Vikings a better team than what they were a few weeks ago? And we'll go through some of the stuff with Dalvin Cook and how good he's been. But I think that it's encouraging. That's right. I think that it's encouraging that the Bears slowed down Derrick Henry. So I'll get him to compare and contrast the two guys. Jason Leisure texted me earlier today and said that he has some very pressing questions for me for his segment at 1 o'clock, which I think that he wants to make fun today because it was not fun or not as much fun as we usually have when we're together. So he's got some questions for me coming up at 1 o'clock. In between that, I dispatched Herbie this morning. I was like, can you find Campy? I mean, I saw him. We had like a station-wide like meeting today, and I saw him in the Zoom with his goatee. But I said, I want to talk with him because there's been a lot of speculative discussion on Russell Westbrook and whether or not he would make a good move for the Bulls to trade for, even with all of that money that's left on his contract. And Darnell Mayberry wrote a piece on The Athletic this morning that I retweeted, and I thought that he did a good job of weighing the pros and the cons of what it would take and what it would mean if Russ was a White Sox. As I'm looking at a White Sox store, a Bull. It's interesting. It actually spurred another Bulls thought that I want to run by Campy. And it's so weird. I wasn't planning on starting here, but since I've already walked into it, let me continue to start here. And then I'll get to the statement on Tony La Russa. It's very short, so it won't take a lot of time. I have been in this place over the last... It started for me on Sunday when people started talking about the NBA draft and they started talking about with the Bulls and with their fourth pick. And, you know, I'm a big Obi Toppin fan, and I've been talking about Obi Toppin as a guy that I would hope would still be there at seven, because the Bulls kind of always ended up drafting seventh, and he's not. But he should be there at four where the Bulls draft, and I think that he'd be a good pick and a good player for years and years and years. But what occurred to me is I'm watching all of these retrospectives about the NBA season and particularly the NBA playoffs. Like, we all knew that the Bulls weren't going to be a part of that whole deal, but it's felt like they haven't been a part of the NBA. It's felt as if the NBA took the Bulls and threw them on an island. And they're like, yeah, we know that you're the third biggest market in the league and all, but your team's not good. And then you had all of this stuff happen with the Bulls. And I guess that we can look at it as a testament of progress with the Bulls that we haven't thought about them. And here's what I mean. I know that that may sound flippant, but here's what I mean. In years past, we were not thinking about them for another reason. We weren't thinking about the Bulls because we felt like there was no way that they were going to be able to dig themselves out of the hole that they had dug over the last 5 to 7 years. That is just going to be a re-rack, and we're just going to see Garpax go out there and destroy everything. It's amazing to me. I do think that public pressure helped move this process along. When you had the Bulls being embarrassed on All-Star Weekend on ESPN, on their highest rated non-sports show, where you had fans chanting while here in Chicago on Navy Pier, chanting for those guys to be fired. The reason that we didn't care about the Bulls and weren't worried about what was going on with the Bulls before was we had seen the movie before. And we were like, yeah, that's great. You're going to tell me more about Lauri Markkanen? Okay, it's fine. You still have a buffoon coaching your team? Okay, cool. Is there anything that I should invest in as a fan of the Bulls? No? Terrific. That's why they had escaped our mind. If I could add this supposition, I think that the reason now that they're not top of mind is because we're like, oh, they're actually run by competent human beings. Not a lot to really worry. Like, you went through hiring a new basketball chief. You went through hiring a new GM. You went through hiring a coach. And all of us kind of went, yeah, that seems to make sense, what the Bulls finally did. So they haven't been top of mind because now you feel like, all right, let's give these new guys an opportunity to do whatever it is that they're getting ready to do. Let's do that. But it struck me, like, I'm watching highlights of Luka hitting last minute shots, and you're watching Dame early on in that process, and everyone like fighting to get into the playoffs. And then the playoffs themselves were really intriguing, except for what one series, two series where it was 3-0 or 3-1. And then you get to the end of it with LeBron and them being as successful as the NHL was. You had those two leagues say, okay, we don't have to rush out here because we're just finishing our season instead of starting our season. Let's get this safety aspect of the game right. So the NHL and the NBA put themselves in bubbles. The bubbles work. They work more effectively than I think anyone ever thought. I know that I was very skeptical. I was like, there's no way that they're going to be able to house up these dudes for 4 months and there's not going to be like a serious incident. And every time that there was a possibility of an incident, whether a dude wanted to go to a strip club for wings or a guy wanted to step over the line for his Postmates or someone was sneaking in with a pass, they handled it immediately and had no infection rate. And it was great. And as I'm watching this celebration and us talk about, I was like, oh yeah, the draft is next week. The NBA draft, like the Bulls are back on the clock. And then when people speculating with Russ, I'm like, oh yeah, the Bulls, they're a basketball team in the NBA. I forgot all about them. And now you can start thinking about what happens next with the Bulls. And I am going to allow myself to be optimistic about it. I'm not expecting the Bulls to go out here and win. So wait, if we talk, we're talking a 72-game season. I'm not asking the Bulls to come out here and win 35 games this season. I'm just happy that there is a new exciting direction for the Chicago Bulls with guys who are in their element right now, that are in the game right now, that they seem to have had success, you know, recently. And now we can start doing speculative stuff with them and say, well, does this make sense for them to even talk about trading for Russell Westbrook? And who would you trade? The Bulls are back, baby. They're back. Okay, so they're not like back, but they're back to closely being top of mind, kind of. All right, I'll ask Campy about that at 12:40. But I wonder if you had the same feelings that I had. And you can just text me and let me know because we're going to move on to some other stuff. 312-644-6767. It felt like they weren't even a part of the league. And now you're like, oh, yeah, they're back. Meanwhile, there is news on the other team that Jerry Reinsdorf owns. Here is a statement from your Chicago White Sox that they put out this morning about Tony La Russa. Quote, as Tony La Russa's attorney said in his statement, Tony deserves all the assumptions and protections granted to everyone in a court of law, especially while this is a pending matter. Once his case reaches resolution in the courts, we will have more to say. The White Sox understand the seriousness of these charges. Close quote. If your statement as a team starts with a lawyer's statement, I don't think that the statement is as effective as you may want it to be. I still hold on to my conspiracy theory. This is wild speculation for me, that the calls are coming from inside the house. I have nothing to base this on. Not a thing. But I keep wondering, how did everyone start to get some of this information? And I keep wondering if someone in the house may have pointed people in the right direction to get it. Because I can tell you that there are plenty of people over there that are not happy with this decision. And since they've been irresponsible, allow me to be irresponsible too. Just wonder. Intriguing ideas. All right, enough of that. You want to talk football? I mean, I know that's kind of depressing too, but I would like to talk football. Dan Durkin does as good a job as anybody when it comes to breaking down tape. He's going to tell you what's wrong with the Bears and whether or not it can be fixed before Monday. I know I'm tasking him with a lot, but I trust him, and he's good at what he does. He's a good man and thorough. We will talk with him next here on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
See that Bears game last week?
Yeah, hell of a game, hell of a game. Bears got a great team this year.
Let's go into the film room with Dan Durkin.
I thought this tape was going to be a conversation stimulator, man.
Dan breaks down every Bears game like no other.
I'm going to go back and watch it. I'm going to evaluate myself and see where I was. And then if there's any drops in there, those guys are going to hear it. I'm going to get on them.
Lawrence Holmes with Dan Durkin now on 670 The Score.
Actually, pretty decent film.
Yeah, he's great at it. We love talking with Dan Durkin. You can check out his YouTube page, The All 22 Review. You can follow him on Twitter at DJ Durkin. He joins me now on the Alpamani Ford Hotline. Alpamani Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to check out in Melrose Park. Or you could just go to alpamaniford.com. Dan, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Lawrence. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. I'm doing my best. I got out and had a nice walk over to Soldier Field today. It was perfect weather to get a little sunlight in and get ready for the Bears game coming up on Monday night. Before we talk about the Bears versus the Vikings, I would like to talk with you about the Bears versus the Titans. All of the things that you have been chronicling for us all season long continue to rear their ugly heads. Before we dwell in the things that they aren't doing well, is there anything on film offensively that gives you any sort of hope that there can be improvement?
So that's not much, but I will say that what I did like was the thought that was put into the first few plays of the Bears' first drive of the game. So you saw the swing pass, the Cordarrelle Patterson. So effectively, this is an extension of the run game. He's offset to Nick Foles' right. They bring him back to the opposite side where there's three blockers set up. It, you know, again, this is effectively like just like a little swing screen to the side. And now you have to trust your wide receivers to be able to make blocks, but you get Cordarrelle Patterson in space where he is effective. And then the next play, I think they stole this play potentially from what they saw a couple weeks ago from Sean McVay, jet sweep action to a bunch to the opposite side, a little play action wrinkle off it. They high load the flat defender. They got him staring at the play action fake, and Jimmy Graham just bends up, and now you got a really easy high completion throw on one side of the field that I think they broke for 24 yards. But then Allen Robinson goes for 4 yards on the 3rd and 5. Jermaine Ifedi whiffs on a block on 4th and 1, and they give the ball up. But what I'm getting at here is getting the ball to players in space is something they need to find different ways to do, specifically Cordarrelle Patterson, Allen Robinson, Darnell Mooney, players like that. But given how much the running game has struggled, I really think they are going to have to continue doing this horizontal, quick passing game. But what that will require is accurate and on-time throws. It will require the wide receivers to block, and it will also require the wide receivers to break tackles in the open field, because the Bears passing scheme as it exists right now is effectively a combination of like low average depth of target, meaning they're not getting the ball down the field in tight windows. And so they're going to have to start scheming more plays like they have done, create a little bit of confusion because the windows are so finite for them when the ball is actually thrown. They're going to have to just scheme a lot of plays here because that's their only chance of really stringing drives together offensively with this current group of players, especially across the offensive line.
Yeah, that quick strike stuff, I'm with you on that. Like, I thought that was fun, and you're right. I like them robbing the Rams with that sprint out play mm-hmm. that they were able to use. I feel like that's this kind of, even if it's horizontal, them doing that as long as they're getting the ball out quickly, I think gives them an opportunity to create some sort of rhythm. And then if they want to attack vertically, maybe you have the defense thinking about playing sideline to sideline and might be able to hit a play.
Definitely, because, I mean, let's call it what it is. The best playmakers on this offense are within their wide receiving core. That's where they have their best playmakers. Darnell Mooney, Allen Robinson, and an inconsistent Anthony Miller. Those are their best opportunities to make plays. And then if you also think of Cordarrelle Patterson as somebody that you can use in that similar role of, you know, swings, little flares, you know, like the screens that they run with him, that's where they have the best chance of you know, making plays. And when they run those, you know, smoke routes and those just like really quick wide receiver screens, those are called constraint plays. So you're basically really trying to test people and force them to stay close to the line of scrimmage. Maybe a team's blitzing too much. Now you can slip that wide receiver behind them. There are ways that you can use the defense's tendencies against them to do that. But then to your point, if you want to break something deep off of that, you could pump fake off of that. So just like they, you know, think a couple of years ago and Mitch had that like Yaha half against the Tampa Bay Bucks, and they kept running that bunch set to the side. And then what do? Once they got the Bucks to think that they were going to run that again, quick play action, the guy at the front of the bunch releases, and now you got Josh Bellamy running free down the field. They're going to have to do things like that. Pick a core package that you can run out of these bunch and three wide receiver sets, and how you can just, you know, be creative with your play calls to get people open. I don't think Matt Nagy has done enough to pry wide receivers open, and I think right now it is very incumbent upon him to realize my wide receivers are the best chance for us to move the ball. My quarterback is not mobile. My offensive line is patchwork at this point in time. So I'm going to have to get very creative on a small package of plays and then what type of counters I can create off of it.
Dan Durkin breaking down Bears film with me here on The Score. Shout out to everyone who is watching the show on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670 The Score if you're new to Twitch. I've been wanting more Cole Kmet. And he got zero targets this past week, which I find unforgivable for the Bears offense. But then I started thinking, like, okay, maybe you're not seeing it. Maybe he's not getting open. I know that you watch every play multiple times. When Cole Kmet is out there, is he not breaking himself free from defenders? Is that why he's not getting the ball?
Yeah, they're not doing a lot. They don't have many plays dialed up specifically for him. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, he is not at the point in his development where we're like, okay, we're going to run the safety off with Darnell here and then create a little bit of space for Cole to operate on a corner or a dig or a seam or something or a nod, whatever it is. He's not at that point in his development. But what you're getting at here is I don't see him fully separating as well as he could when he is actually in his route. That was one of the things that I signaled as a concern when I went back and watched his film at Notre Dame was he's not very sudden. You know, he's a big target. He has reliable hands. He will catch the ball in traffic, but he's not a guy. He's not an Evan Ingram. He's not a guy who's going to win with his feet. He's going to win with his length. He's going to win with his ability to post the guy up. But I don't think at this point in time they really have plays dialed up for him specifically in the passing game. So what it really comes down to is, have you settled into the appropriate zone? If on your side of the field there is a route that's set up to beat a zone coverage, are you creating distance and a window for the quarterback to get the ball into? But then if it's man, are you breaking leverage? And I don't see him breaking leverage in those situations. It may come with time, but I do agree with you. They need to find more ways to get him the ball, even if it's like, you know, in third down situations, if you're going to start using him similar to how Jimmy Graham kind of made his name, he's a big guy. He can catch. He has really good radius that he catches with his hands, so he's not pinning the ball against his pads. Give him a chance to make a jump ball play against a safety or a linebacker or something along those lines. So I definitely have seen the transition of he is taking more snap share from Demetrius Harris, as he should. Now they need to find two, just like I was talking about a little bit ago. Figure out ways and small packages of plays for your players in certain situations. When I think of where he could be effective, I think of third and short, and I think of red zone situations. They struggle in both those situations. Get him the ball, find a couple plays he's comfortable with running, and put that in your weekly call sheet.
Well, I kept wondering, in between the 20s, when they're running these kind of flare patterns for Jimmy Graham, I'm sitting there going, why can't they do that with Cole Kmet?
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, the thing about that Graham that I like most is, like, to your point, he's more effective inside the 20s rather than from the 20 to the 20. So I do think that they haven't quite figured out. And this is one of the confounding things for me. You were asking a very interesting question about, like, why Matt Nagy's offense didn't work. And I actually kind of answered it in my own way. I came up with about 10 things right off the bat that I could think of. But one of them on this list is, I don't know if he and Ryan Pace are in full agreement about, like, the profile of players that they need at certain positions. Because if the model for this is the Kansas City Chiefs, Travis Kelce is not Cole Kmet. Do you know what I'm saying? They're two totally different breeds of tight ends in terms of how they are able to be effective. And so mismatch there. And then you draft Riley Ridley. He's more of a possession receiver. Then you draft Javon Wibbs, another possession receiver. Now you draft Darnell Mooney, more of a speed guy. I don't know what the goal is here. So I think that they haven't fully settled on what is the right combination and profile of athlete we need to make this offense successful. Be that as it may, he needs to be able to, he being Matt Nagy, needs to be able to understand that and figure out the best way to use these pieces, because these guys can make plays for you in situations. Find those situations and have the right plays called for them in that. And I think he's really struggling to do that.
A texter actually, it seems like, read my notes, because I was going to ask you about this, but a texter wants to know about Robert Quinn and why he's not, like, what was it, his first offensive play he had, or defensive play, he had a sack.
Fifth sack.
And hasn't had one since. Is he playing well enough without the sack total that it's still worth it, or does he need to be more productive getting the quarterback on the ground?
He does need to be more productive in getting the quarterback on the ground. He is creating opportunities for people next to him, like, you know, Bilal Nichols and players like that. So he's creating singles for them. But when you think about it, a defensive line that has Akeem Hicks, Khalil Mack, and then, you know, plug in whatever you want to put on the opposite side, Bilal Nichols, Brent Urban, and then Quinn next to that, man, you're probably singled up a lot. So you need to be able to win those singles and get the quarterback on the ground as a consequence of it. And I was kind of picking on him a little bit during Sunday's game, just because he's been so quiet. And you think about the money that was allocated to him in that position, and you think about all the other acute needs. I mean, good for him for getting money. I will never, you know, I want every NFL player to get every dollar they can. This is a violent sport. I get all of that. But when you think about the other needs across the offensive line in some other areas, yes, they needed a pass rusher opposite Khalil Mack. But when you sign somebody for that amount, he needs to be a playmaker and he needs to be a difference maker. And at this point right now, he is neither.
What's been good about the Vikings over the last couple of weeks?
I think that they have embraced the fact that they are truly a run-first team, and Kirk Cousins is a game manager. They are just one of three teams in the league that runs the ball more than they pass. They it's them, the Ravens, and the Patriots, I believe, that are in that category. But Dalvin Cook is playing at an incredibly high level, and I think that this zone scheme is a great match for him as far as, you know, wait for the crease to get there, and then he's planting his foot in the ground, get north and south very quickly and make plays with that. So I think the combination of the offensive line, how Kubiak is running it, and how Dalvin Cook runs is working very well. And then for as infrequently as this team is throwing, Justin Jefferson is really emerging as an excellent receiver and a perfect complement to Adam Thielen. He's working so well out of the slot, very productive. And when you think about how few opportunities he's getting and how productive he is with them, I think that you know, that's a great find for them from a personnel perspective. But I think more than anything, their identity has been established. We always talk about what's the Bears' identity. The Vikings' identity is clear. They're going to run the ball, and then they're going to try and get some really hard play action off of that and hope they get you biting on that. So Dalvin Cook has been the biggest difference for them. But I think defensively, this Vikings team has holes all over the place. I just don't know if the Bears are going to be able to find them.
Dan, one more thing. I want to ask you about the Bears defense. I brought this up earlier this week, and again, since you watched the tape, you're our tape guy on this show, I want to know if it's possible. I think that the Bears defense can do more, and I hate that I'm being unfair to them, because the offense should have to do their part. And the way that I think the Bears defense could do more is with some takeaways. Am I crazy, or have there been opportunities for Kyle Fuller, for Jalen Johnson, for even the linebackers to come up with some game-changing, not just pass breakups, but interceptions.
Yeah, there have been three over the past few weeks. Roquan, Kyle Fuller, and Jalen all had opportunities. But, I mean, man, think about how hard and, like, what a tall, like, order that is. It's like, not only are we expecting you to prevent the other team from scoring points, we are now wholly reliant on you to score points for us as well. So I think that, unfortunately, that's the reality of it. But I do think, Lawrence, to your point, they can expect more, and I'm sure the defense expects more of them. I really think that reality has set in for this defense at that point, at this point in time. What I mean by that is, like, they know their margin for error is so slim, so I guarantee you they're going to probably be a little bit more opportunistic and try and get these. They just have to hang on to the ball. Roquan had an opportunity. Kyle had an opportunity this past week. Jalen Johnson had an opportunity this past week. So, yes, you are correct, and we should expect more, because at this point in time, it's clear the offense isn't going to be able to do it all on its own. The defense is going to have to be counted on to make those game-breaking plays, and I think they have that within them. It's just a matter of holding on to the football.
Check out Dan Durkin's All-22 review on YouTube. Follow him on Twitter. He is a great game time follow at DJ Durkin. Sir, I will talk to you next week, and hopefully we're having a happier conversation.
Yes, sir. Enjoy the week, Lawrence. I'll talk to you later.
That's Dan Durkin. We need to take a break. He's so good at this. I love having him on the show, and please follow him on Twitter and check out the YouTube page. We're going to take a break. Old friend gets to stop by the show. Rick Camp is going to join me. Rick Damkamp is going to join me because I've got basketball questions, and they have to do with the Bulls. We'll discuss that next here on The Score.
Solo Mayo, that's Rick Camp working the board in The Score studios in downtown Chicago.
He is back working at The Score, which is great news. He's an incredible resource for me and for you when it comes to what's going on with the Bulls in the NBA. Rick Camp now joins me on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford has 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from out in Melrose Park, or you can just go to alpamonteford.com. If you're on the Twitch stream, you can see the full beard that Rick Camp has grown out. Twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score. What's up, Campy?
Not much. How are you?
I'm doing all right. I had some questions for you, Bulls-wise. A lot of people over the last couple of days, and I don't know if the Basketball Camp podcast has delved into this yet, have been talking about the idea of maybe the Bulls trading for Russell Westbrook. First things first, does that make any sense to you?
I understand people wanting to bring it up, but to me personally, it really doesn't. I mean, everybody talks about the contract, and it is onerous. So it's a 3-for-$135 left on that contract. That's not great, especially when you're claiming to be a team that wants to possibly, you know, have some flexibility in the summer of 2021, or just in general, because to make Russell Westbrook really effective, you have to do what Houston did, and outside of obviously having James Harden, you have to make everything perfect for him at this point in his career. It's his 32nd birthday today. So you'd have him for ages 32, 33, 34. He needs to have four shooters around him, because other teams in the bubble were essentially treating him like a center, because that's about the range he has shooting-wise, and honestly, probably even less range than a traditional center at this point in time. But he reportedly wants to leave partially because he wants to be the dude again. So if you trade for Russell Westbrook, it doesn't make any sense to then draft LaMelo Ball or Killian Hayes or whoever else you want to that would be a primary ball handler. Essentially, this rebuild was supposed to get you out of basketball hell or the treadmill of mediocrity, and this move would put you right back into it. Because essentially, what's that different from what Russell Westbrook on this contract versus just giving Jimmy Butler the Supermax at the time that you didn't want to do that, and just having a younger cast around him? Because really, I would rather have Jimmy Butler on a Supermax at the time he signed it, and I don't like that idea necessarily either, than Russell Westbrook now that needs to be healthy, that relies on his athleticism to be the main engine for your offense for 3 years at over $40 million per season. It just doesn't make much sense to me.
when I was reading Darnell Mayberry's piece in The Athletic, and I thought that he did a really great job of like breaking down the pros and cons of it, he was talking about how you would even get to that point, like as far as a dollars trade match goes. And he brought up Porter and LaVine, and I immediately wrote down, this is what I wrote down, Campy. This is honestly why I wanted to have you on the show. I guess it points to the question of what do you think is the ceiling for LaVine, and has he hit it yet? So I will pose that question to you. What is the ceiling for Zach LaVine, and has he already reached it?
I think the only reason I hesitate at all to say that he might not have reached it is because Zach is such a hard worker and has clearly added something to his game every year. But I think he's at about his peak because the off-ball defense is clearly just not going to get there. He's not a good playmaker for others, which similar to Westbrook, and Westbrook's a little bit better at it, that puts a cap on what your offense can be when that is your primary initiator. Because I know it was a couple years ago that in a representative amount of drives per game, so getting into the paint, Zach LaVine had the lowest assist rate of, I want to say it was about a dozen guys that had the amount of touches and drives into the lane. He just isn't that great at looking for others. And honestly, he's a guy that, and this is probably going to sound more harsh than it is meant, I don't think Zach LaVine's basketball IQ is that great. Because defensively, obviously, it's having any sort of idea of where the offensive player he's defending is going to go. He has no idea, doesn't really seem to care that much. He's okay on ball when the person is right in front of him and all he has to do is react. When he has the ball, he's just not great. Part of the reason that he's not great as a playmaker for others is he hasn't been that great at realizing what his movements do to the defense in terms of, okay, if I make this move, it'll make this guy's defender come in so then I can kick out to him for a three. Or just understanding of how to use the pick when he's in a pick and roll situation properly. I can't even count the amount of times over the last few years, whether it's Robin Lopez or whoever's at center, gets an offensive foul, partially because Zach tries to go before the pick is set or before he's able to properly slip that screen. So I don't think there's much left for Zach LaVine to improve, even though he is still at a younger age. He's still kind of like the early part of a middle-aged NBA player at this point in terms of career, just because of years he's been there. But still, you're giving up Zach LaVine. You're giving up an expiring contract and Otto Porter for one of the five worst contracts in the NBA. No, thank you.
Next week, I would hope that we could have more time, like specifically as we get close to the draft, to talk about this. But with you looking at the draft for the Bulls, considering what type of pieces they need, are those pieces available where the Bulls will be drafting?
I mean, what the Bulls need most is a number one dude. And mind you, Russell Westbrook is not that either. So we don't need people coming at us with that. But no, there's no number one dude in this draft. Even if you got LaMelo Ball, unless he highly exceeds even the most optimistic person's thoughts on what he can be, is not going to be the best player on a championship team. This draft is not that good at the top. There's some depth to it. Now, if you want to find a guy that can be a wing defender, you can do that. You can find guys to fit into your rotation, fit into your starting lineup maybe, but you're not going to find that dude. I listen to plenty of draft guys that say there are 5 to 7 players in next year's draft that would go number one in this draft. So that just shows, A, how good the top end of the draft is next year, but also how blah it is this year. And that's why you hear all the talk about the trades, whether it's Minnesota or Golden State, because there's not that dude that can extend Golden State's window. There's not that person that can be a perfect complement to D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns. That's why it's very much a beauty's in the eye of the beholder draft. And even if the Bulls get a guy like LaMelo, I think that'd be great. That's my number one thought, is if you can get LaMelo Ball, especially if he falls to 4, that's the perfect situation. Because as much as AK talks about wanting to push the pace and have a ball-moving offense, LaMelo provides that. He's got plenty of issues of his own, but those two main principles he has. So that's probably your primary thing, and there's been reports that they want a primary ball handler, but you're not going to find the dude in this draft.
So the idea would be, do you think that that means that they don't like Coby White, or they don't like Coby White with the ball in his hands, that he becomes an off the ball player?
Yeah, I think it just means that they see Coby White, and mind you, this is also subject to change just because it was Kobe's rookie year, but they see him as more of a score first guy. And the only reason it worked in Denver with Jamal Murray being that way is because you had Nikola Jokic to play that primary playmaker role, so which is something you can't really bank on being able to do anywhere else because Jokic is just a unicorn.
He's a freak.
In that way.
Yeah, like he's an absolute freak.
Yeah, so Coby White is probably best set as a secondary ball handler who also gets a lot of run as your primary ball handler on the second unit. Maybe he's like your first guy that checks out in the first quarter so that he can come back and lead that second unit and be more of a microwave scorer type guy. That's probably, at the moment, short-term what the Bulls are hoping he can be while they still try and rework this roster.
Campy, let's do some draft stuff next week, man.
Absolutely, whenever.
You should follow Rick Camp on Twitter at Rick C. Camp. He is terrific, and we're so happy that he's back doing stuff on this show. Campy, as always, I appreciate you. Thanks so much for dropping by the show.
Appreciate it.
That is Rick Camp talking a little bit of Bulls. Oh, you feel how meaty that breakdown was? That was some meaty basketball stuff right there from Rick Camp. We're going to have a little fun. Jason Leisure says that there are questions that he wants to ask me about what, I'm not sure, but he's going to join me next, and you'll want to stick around for that because he's always entertaining. That's next here on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.